Accession number 29238, Reel 6.
Mr. Wiggum, Reel 6. So we're just talking about the barracudas in...
Yes, so they wouldn't let us have a swim, which was wise. Much as we would have liked it, it was so hot. But I can't remember just how long we were anchored in the bay at Trinidad now. I know our... commanding officer had to go ashore, and some folks were on business and back. But I think we were there 24 hours at any rate. And then we were off again, and we crossed the South Atlantic to Cape Town. And when we got within reach of Cape Town, apparently we learned later there was a German raider about, so we were diverted while the Dorset, I think it was, went out and sorted this raider out, and we got into the Cape Swells. Well, the Cape Swells have got to be sort of seen to be believed, that they, all Sunday morning, all we saw of the destroyers was the cross trees on their masts. They were way down in the troughs, you know, or we were. The aircraft carrier, she'd heel over on these things until you saw the whole of her flight deck. Well, the word rollers, I mean, the word breaking, it was just swell. And they'd come into the ship, and the flying fish were flying straight off the top of them and landing on the deck. And the ship, our ship's office, there were typewriters flying around the floor, and cabinets, goodness knows what. But eventually we sailed out of that lot. Oh, we tried a church service in the middle of it, being Sunday morning. And the church service was perfectly all right, except that it wasn't so easy when everybody tried to stand to attention for the national anthem at the end, you know. But we got out of there and...
What were people like during that? What was seasickness and...
I don't think by then, of course, we'd been at sea quite a long time, you know. And we were about, and how long were we at sea?
We're sleeping all right.
Yes, yes. But at any rate, we were in Bombay for New Year, and we left in the October, so we'd been at sea a while then, you know. And we got into Cape Town. We were there for 4 days. Very nice 4 days. And there were folks, the South Africans were down on the quay there, just waiting to whip you up and take you off and give you a good time, you know. It was very nice. And
what did you get up to there?
Well, nothing wildly exciting, you know, but as a fellow, Ian Hall, I think it was, they called him. Nice chap. He and some friends took another lad and I under their wing and took us out round the coast to the likes of Camps Bay and Hood Bay, and we went into little pubs and had a little drink, nothing much. And then he had us round to his apartment. We met his Afrikaner, you know, Dutch lady, wife, or she was going to be his wife, so we're getting married shortly. And everybody had that sort of experience, you know. There was a time we had, I remember going to the Delmonico Theatre, and but most of the time we were being taken around by people and one thing, you know, very hospitable. And we were there, say, 4 days, and then we set off, and we should have gone up to the desert. But instead, they moved us over to India. And things were getting sticky there in Singapore. And I think Duff Cooper was the bloke behind it, who had decided, apparently, without us knowing then, that they were going to send us as reinforcements to Singapore.
You weren't aware of this?
No, no. I think we probably all jumped overboard if we had been.
What was going on in Singapore at the time?
No, I mean, at that time, there was nothing terribly serious. Well, I might say, there's fighting within up in Malaya, you know. And at any rate, we went to Bombay, disembarked. We had a day or two in Bombay, and then went by train up to, I think it's classed as a semi-hill station of Ahmednagar. And we went into a barracks area there, East Ridge Barracks. And
is this the whole regiment?
Yes, the whole regiment.
Was anybody else with you? Any other?
Not in East Ridge, or in other places, I think. Because, I mean, there was more than our regiment on board. And we were there for 3 weeks when we were taken down to Bombay again.
What sort of things were you doing whilst you were there?
There again, manoeuvres and drill and gun drill and the same sort of things that went on, you know, all the time. And then we were taken down, as I say, to Bombay. And we embarked on the Empress of Asia. Well, I understand, or we were all understood, that at one time the Australians had been put on the Empress of Asia and they all walked off. But of course we were British soldiers, so we were told more easily. She'd been a lovely ship. She really had. When you saw her saloons and one thing, other than the panelling and that, in her day she'd been a lovely ship. But she'd been due for the scrapyard when she was recommissioned as a trooper. And, it was a mess. That's the only thing you can say. That we set off in convoy with the... We'd lost the Yankee convoy then. We had the Dorchester as our escort. And we were supposed to go up to the desert, but they shot us off. We headed round for Singapore. And we couldn't go through the Malacca Straits, which was the normal way, because the Japs by then had control of the Malacca Straits. So we went down and through the Sunda Straits between Java and Sumatra, and up the Banka Straits towards Singapore, where, of course, as we approached, we had an aerial attack.
Up until that time, had there been any threat of any of enemy action?
No, we hadn't had any great trouble at all, you know.
Even across the Atlantic?
No. Well, the blooming great the American escort, I suppose. They probably looked and thought, ooh, better get out of here.
Was that a realistic fear amongst the men, any reaction, whilst you were on board the ship?
I don't know that it was, really. I don't think you thought about it particularly. I mean, you did your boat drill and always carried your life jacket. And you always knew it was possible, but nobody got in a state about it, or anything, you know. Not nobody that I met did, or saw. But certainly we knew we were in for trouble as we headed for Zingy, because for one thing, I was on picket, in charge of the picket at night, the night before, and I was standing with a naval petty officer when a Dutch destroyer, like it was, pulled up close within hailing distance of us. And this was typical of the Empress of Asia. He shouted over on his loud hailer, "Empress of Asia, you're last in the convoy. We're leaving one ship with you and the rest are going ahead." So we'd lost about 120-pound steam pressure on the boilers. Their firing crew were terrible, absolutely hopeless. And the day before, we'd had a near miss. Flight of bombers, I think, had been at Sumatra. And they saw us, so one of them just had a packet and put a string of bombs across us, but didn't hit us. And all the stokers immediately left the so-called. And a squad of troops went down and fired the boilers until they got the blighters back again.
Who were the crew? Were the Royal Navy?
The Royal Navy, no, they were merchant.
Merchant.
But there were the dregs, I think, on that ship. And they finally got them back in. And
The British merchant?
Oh, yes, the British Merchant Navy. That never had anything to do with any of them. But I know at one period, the captain and my commanding officer were standing at the top of the companionway down to the boiler house with the revolver each. When you have you tried to come up, you've had it, you know. That was when the attack started, I think, off Singapore. And we were about 7 miles off Zingy. It was in sight, you know, but the rest of the convoy had nearly all got into dock.
Did you know where you were going at this time?
Yes, when we were hit right amidships with an oil bomb, killed one of our officers and blinded our lieutenant quartermaster, poor lad, and killed one or two others.
Where were you when this happened?
Down below, in the troop space. That was my position as the lance sergeant.
Do you remember it happening? What happened?
Oh, God, aye. Well, we were all on deck. Could have been getting everything ready for going ashore. And we didn't know the situation in Singapore. And we saw these planes, fighters, coming out. And the Japanese Zero, or Navio, the naval version, looked very similar to Hurricanes. And we thought, oh, here's our escort. Well, we didn't know that we had no Air Force flying in Singapore. But, oh, here's our escort. Until they opened out on the machine guns, and then the deck cleared like that, roof. And so, as I say, we went to our positions down below. It was a frightening experience, worrying experience, really, that all the lads were down there, and we were there with our troop officer was there, you know, and one of the battery commanders, Major Wiley, was down there as well. among the sergeants, and we were on the bottom level, another level above us, these troop spaces, and we heard the bombs hit. And I think altogether there were about three hit. And, you know, the Stokers, well, they got abandoned ship, and so everybody left. And there wasn't enough steam pressure to operate the pumps, so they couldn't do anything, any firefighting. And we were down there, I don't know how long, a good hour, at least. That was the one criticism I had, but you've got to be fair with all that was going on. You know, folks can't think of everything, can they? That nobody got word down to us to tell us that the ship was still watertight and afloat, you know. And okay, so we were sitting down there, and the fire, of course, had taken hold, this old ship and all the superstructure in the center, you know, the cabins and everything, and got down, and the smoke started to percolate along what they call the double bottoms, and then up into our place, and you know, we saw the blooming smoke coming up. And then apparently we were drifting towards a minefield, so the captain ordered the anchors away. Well, the clamps on the anchor chains were rusted, and I had a squad of our lads bouncing on them to break the rust away. Finally, they got the anchors away. Well, the anchor, your chain locker, was just ahead of our compartment, and we didn't know what was happening. And it sounded as though the ship was breaking up, you know. Well, the chains all rattling out. I thought, my God, the ship's breaking up. But everything else seemed steady. But it was a pretty horrible experience, believe me. And we didn't know why we were being kept down below so long. And I was standing talking to my battery, my troop officer, Lieutenant Wesley Worth, and another couple of our sergeants. And I mean, the lads are on the stairways, waiting to get up, you know, and I couldn't understand it. And I said to Lieutenant Worth, I said, "Look," I said, "I'm going to make my way up here and see what the holdup is, so at least we can tell the lads if everything's all right."
Was there a fear that the ship would sink?
Well, we didn't know what had been. As it happened, the ship wasn't. She was watertight still. She hadn't been holed. And that's what I say. My only criticism, they didn't get that word down to us. So I made my way up the stairs, and I just got to up on deck when we're given, okay, get out. And so everybody came out. And we found that the reason why we'd been kept down there, we had light anti-aircraft and Ven gun, you know, that sort of thing, posts all around the ship. And the fire had got to some of those posts, and there was ammunition exploding and buzzing around people's ears all over the place. So those who were on deck were having to take cover, and so they weren't getting any more out. But nobody came and told us that. That was the mistake. But fair enough, it was our first, apart from the Liverpool air raid, it was our first baptism of fire, but there was nobody panicked, you know. No panic at all. I was really proud of them.
So they coped very well with the situation?
Oh, they did, very well. And then there was the case, of course, of getting ashore. Because the boats are no damn good. I think there was only one boat kept afloat. When there were some that were just burned in the falls. They couldn't get them dropped up to the state they should be in. And so Colonel Dean, our commanding officer, there was Raffles Lighthouse, which was on a sort of rock away from us a bit, with a pier to it. And Colonel Dean said, look, well, anybody who can swim, you've got your life jackets, make for Raffles Lighthouse and leave the rafts and things for the lads who can't swim. So I thought, right. So I sat down and laughed about it afterwards. I took my left boot off and my left stocking. I rolled my stocking up, put it in the boot. I rolled my gaiter up and put it in the boot. I did the same with the right leg. And I had my haversack, of course. And then I placed the haversack down. And I put my pair of boots in front of it. I thought, you damn fool. You know, you're not in the barrack room. And when I looked up, you could have almost put a line along the line of exactly the same all the way along. So that they talk about bull, you know, but it does have its benefits. It's that sort of thing that keep fellas steady. You know, so...
It's that same training, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So I went over the side on a rope ladder. What are you talking about? The daft things you do. We'd been warned with our life jackets that if you had to jump, you hung, pulled the foot down, hung onto it, you know. Because when it hit the water, if you didn't, then the shock would pop and could break your neck. Well, I had my topi on, my bluebell topi, strap under my chin. And I thought, well, if I'm going to float about in this sun, it's going to get a bit hot, I'll keep it on. So I went down, over and down the ladder. Now, it was about the only new thing on the flipping ship, I think. It was a new ladder. So, of course, with the weight of everybody going down, it started to stretch. And the non-swimmers who were hanging on the bottom of it started to panic because they thought it was coming loose. I thought, oh, I better ease this up. So about halfway down the ship, I jumped, hit the water, and bluebell helmet, of course, filled up with water, and the chin strap nearly did the same as the life jacket would have done. So I came to the surface, and it was down over my ears, eyes, so I shoved it forward, looped up. As soon as I did that, the curb bit at the back hit the life jacket and knocked it over my eyes again. I tried that about three times and then took it off and flung the damn thing. So I started to swim away from the ship, and one of our lads called, Sergeant Wiggum, can you swim? I said, yes, Johnny, what's the matter? He was a bombardier, about 6'1", I think. He said, I can't. Can I hang on to you? And I said, come on, get hold of my back of my life jacket. And I told him, I said, look, I said, I know you say you can't swim, but you know what a frog does with his legs? So just you kick out like that and it'll help. Did he? He just trailed along behind me like a 6'1" streamer. And I swam and swam for over an hour, swimming about in the water, trying to head for Raffles Lighthouse. And I was getting really tired. And then a cutter motorized naval cutter from the Exeter, HMS Exeter, who was there throwing everything but the kitchen sink over the Japs. He came along, and the bloke I was rescuing was as fresh as paint then. So he moved round and grabbed the gunwale and pulled himself on board, and then got hold of me and pulled me in. You know, it's kind of daft. But then this cutter, oh, we picked up another one of our lads. He couldn't swim, and he was slowly drowning in his life jacket because he was gasping, and the sea was calm, you know, but the little ripples were breaking over it, and he was just swallowing them. And I saw him there, and I bellowed at him, "Hang on, Bobby." I got on the gunwale to go after him when the petty officer, "Hang on, Sergeant, I'll get him." And he swung the boat round and he picked Bobby Boyce up. And we headed for Raffles Lighthouse and got up there onto the pier.
Were there many in the water?
Everybody, really, you know. There were about 3,000 on the ship. There was only like about two boats at the most that got away. And
we're still under attack at this point.
Well, fortunately, unlike the Japs, but there must have been a bit of chivalry somewhere amongst them, because I understand that they signalled down, "Cease fire," and you didn't pick up your survivors. Otherwise, the Air Force could have come and just shot us all up, you know. But, so we got up onto the pier at Raffles Lighthouse, and then a steam ferry came out from Singapore and picked us up and took us into Keppel Harbour. And of course we were just as we stood, bare feet, khaki shirt and shorts and underpants and singlet, and that was, we'd lost everything else.
Wet and bedraggled.
Aye. And we had to leave everything else on the ship.
And all lost all the rest of
the kit, yes.
And everything.
I even lost my pipe because I jumped and saw it fall out of my pocket. I thought, "Oh well, there goes my pipe." You know, it probably floated, but I couldn't see it when I got to the surface.
So, what were your reactions when you got back on to dry land? Was it one of relief?
Thank God for that. That and so we were sort of herded together and found out what our regiments were, who was who and who was what, and I was whipped along to a place called Branksome Road to a house there that had been a Chinese merchant's house, and I got off the truck. And I went in the gate. It was a fairly long driveway. And this apparition came running out of the house. It was my troop commander, Lieutenant Wesley Worth. John Wesley Worth, God bless him. He had pretty curly hair because it was all up, like all over the place, you know. And his clothes had been soaking wet, so he found a long nightdress in the house and he put this on. And what do you know, if you know what hose tops are, hose tops were stockings without feet, which you put on, you know, for a uniform, and then the gaiters on top. Your dad would know about hose tops. And so he had a pair of hose tops on, with the ends, of course, hanging out here. And he came running along with these blooming things flapping. And he said, "Sergeant Wiggum, thank God you're the last one to arrive. We thought we'd lost you." And he flung his arms around me and led me off into the house. Everybody else had got there before me, you know.
Had you lost many men?
No, we only lost Lieutenant Bob Wilson, that was killed when the bomb came down, And then, as I say, our lieutenant quartermaster, John Sheridan, he was blinded, poor lad. But he survived. But we didn't lose anybody then. It was amazing, really.
So everybody else made it ashore?
Yes. And Colonel Dean was... He was OC Troops, of course. He was given the DSO for the conduct of the regiment, which he made very, very clear to everybody. He said, I've got the DSO. He said, I'm the person who wears it. But he said, it is not, in my opinion, just my DSO. It is the regiment's. But, yes, we were very lucky that about 3,000 men on board. There were some lost, I believe, from other units, one or two, who jumped too early, panicked a little bit, and jumped off the stern. And of course, the screws are still going, you know.